Okay, good afternoon. This afternoon I want to talk a little bit about something which in fact was not on the advertised listing, because I'd actually spoken about that 2 weeks ago. It is available online, that particular talk that I gave about prejudice. And it's certainly worth listening to, I hope, because, you know, the Jewish sources, the traditional sources are always very interesting. But what I want to talk about today is something which I think is equally as important, and it's obviously something that affects everyone in this particular group, including myself, and that's the issue of not just, as they say, getting old, but being old. Does the Bible, does the rabbinic literature have a view on this? Does it tell us positive things or negative things? What does it say about aging? And it's something which today is such a big topic because of the advances in medicine that we all know about, which means that, you know, we can live longer, thank God, on the one hand, but then we have these very difficult discussions about what is called quality of life. And these are very, very delicate issues, and I want to keep this as generic as possible. I don't want to go into specific personal situations, but just want to show you a little bit of where the rabbinic literature goes on this particular subject, and it won't surprise you, I guess, to find that there are contradictory views. I'll give you the famous verse which we say at Rosh Hashanah time, the new year, and we say it in our shuls, and we say it over and over and over and over again, I don't know how many times, you know, during that particular period, the new year. And it's taken from Psalms chapter 71. And we know the Hebrew, we say to God, do not cast us aside when we are old, and when our strength fails us, do not forsake us. So that kind of has, how should we say, a bit of a negative connotation. We're saying that basically when we get to a certain stage, if it wasn't for the grace and the help of God, we'd all be, as it were, not coping. The Talmud says something also which doesn't necessarily give us a lot of confidence. The Talmud in Shabbat, page 151, it says there, Ad shelo yavo yemei hara, when the Bible talks about the days which are bad, it talks about the days of aging. So you've got here already two sources which don't seem to see aging in a very positive way. You've got also an interesting comment from one of the rabbis of the Talmud. This is 2,000 years ago. And he said, to Omri Inche, he says that people would say, Karavina Zutre Legavre, right, that any stage of life you're in, people would say to me, well, wouldn't it be better if you were? In other words, if you were very old, wouldn't it be better if you were younger? And when you were younger, people would say to you, you need to be a bit older to understand. We've all heard that. And again, this is all comments which, interestingly, were written such a long time ago, and do seem to suggest a certain negativity. There is an aspect of old age which I don't even know if I want to read this. The Talmud talks about this again in Shabbat, page 152. Talmud is a phenomenal, phenomenal book. One of the things that I like to do is just to get people to know that there is such a thing as Talmud. Right? It's so phenomenal that in South Korea, the South Korean government heard about this particular book, and that it gets a certain way of thinking in people's minds. They teach Talmud in the schools there, in South Korea. Now, they're not teaching it to a Jewish population who lives in South Korea. They're teaching it in their school population because they know that if children study this and young adults study this, they'll learn how to argue, how to put forward arguments, you know, in terms of orderly arguments and all this sort of thing, explain how to develop themes. Talmud is a phenomenon, and what upsets me so much is that it's the treasure which the Jewish religion has given to the world, and other people have discovered it, and many Jews are still are not aware of it. And this is something, you know, your rabbi, if he's not teaching you Talmud, he hasn't got a Talmud class, go back and tell him, I want to study it. Right? If it's not the legalistics, at least study the stories. There are literally thousands of anecdotes which are really worth knowing. here, the negative aspects of old age. It says that what happens, unfortunately, it says that, you know, one develops certain health issues. This is what the Talmud talks about. The one that I think is something we'll all understand. It talks about the fact that one's hearing gets a bit difficult. It just goes. It's just too depressing. I don't even know if I want to read through all of this. It says to us that. Hang on a second. Yeah, it says that the ears of the elder mitkabdot. Mitkabdot means they get very heavy. All right, that means that, you know, you have a problem hearing. All of these sources, it goes into a lot of the aches and pains of what everybody experiences in old age. And apart from anything else, just to realize, nothing new. Plus ça change. This has been around for 2,000 years. Nowadays, thank God, we're in a position where maybe not as critical in certain ways, certain things medicine has been able to alleviate. Maybe not to get rid of, but to alleviate. However, this is on the negative side, but listen to the positive. There is a wonderful list of statements. I'll just read some of them to you because they are so positive about aging. And first one is Mishnah Pirkei Avot, something that we read every week in the synagogue. And it says, if you teach someone who is of an older age, what is that compared to? Dio ketuvah niyar machuk. That's basically writing on parchment, which has been partially erased, but of course it's available. If it's worked properly, it can receive the ink as well, and probably with a deeper awareness. The rabbis were very encouraging of people to study when they get older. It says, "Alomim min hazakenim." And when you learn from the elders, what is it compared to? Le'ochal anavim b'shulot v'shotei yayim yoshin. You're eating the best grapes, and you're drinking the best wine. That's the way they describe it. That's not a bad thing. And it's not necessarily even talking about Lomei Torah. It doesn't say you're studying religious subjects. It's just saying learning from other people's life experience. Boy, there is so much one can learn. I'm annoyed at myself over the years coming to camp, particularly at Camp Block and now here at in the Berkshires, because there have been so many life histories which were overwhelming. People's experiences, particularly Holocaust experiences, people's experiences coming to America, how they set themselves up, how they had to struggle, you know, a lot of things. I mean, one gentleman who's was mentioned to me recently, who's still alive, living in Florida, he's an unbelievable gentleman. He's now probably well into his 90s. And on a fast day, I saw him and he was fasting. He was like 90, 92, 93 years old at the time. And I said to him, "Why are you fasting?" He said, "Well, I'll tell you a little story." He says, "I was in Auschwitz, I was in a lineup. And the lineup was life and death. And what happened to me was that as I get to the end of the line, and I know I'm going to be chosen to be taken out and I will be killed, the officer looked at me and he said to me, his name's Freeman, he said, 'Freeman, you know, you look hungry today, you look hungry every day.' So he said, 'Freeman, you look hungry.' So Freeman said, whatever you title you gave to this particularly evil person, the officer, and Freeman said to him, 'Yeah, today's a fast day, and I haven't eaten even the little bit of bread that you give us. I didn't eat it today.' And normally that would have been the moment when they would have taken a gun, literally, and that would have been it. And for reasons that Friedman doesn't understand to this very day, the officer took him and threw him out of the line. Maybe he was angry with him, who knows? And to this day, he survived Auschwitz, he came to America, became a chazan, he's a very special man. And this is a life experience. Every time I get a little bit of a krechz, a little bit of a Yom Kippur, and I feel as if, oh, I need to eat something, I always think of Chazan Friedman. I think of him and I say, you know what, this man has taught me a lesson in life. And it's really sometimes you've got to elevate yourself to go above and beyond if you can. If you can. And this is just one life story which I share because it is unbelievable. What can I say to you? Joining the Sanhedrin, the Jewish court, right? How old do you have to be? It says that Bali Kuma, the person joining the Sanhedrin, has got to be a man of stature. Bali Chochma has got to be a man of wisdom. Okay, I hope this is true around the world. Bali Mare, he's got to look the part. Wow. And Bali Ziknan, he should have a beard. Okay, if you haven't got a beard, you can still join the court. That I hope is true. But what they're trying to show you is that in terms of aging and the presentation of aging, it's not a negative thing. On the contrary, this is what we're looking for. We're looking for life experience. We're looking for people who can share, who have been through whatever experiences they've been through, to become that source of wisdom for us. Again, I'm just going to quote from another comment here about an incredible story. The story of Abraham and Isaac, famous story in the Bible. And according to the Midrash, this is very interesting, they looked alike, surprise, surprise. But they looked so much alike that people would mix up between the two. And it's surprising because Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. So when you see Isaac running around, all right, when they did the famous story, the binding of Isaac, the Akedah, was 37 years old. But Abraham's 137. And they still had a problem. People had a problem distinguishing between Abraham and Isaac. So what happened? And this is a famous story. It says, Amar lefanav, so Abraham said to God, Ribono olamim, that, master of the world, Adam ubeno nichlasim makom, a man and his son come into a place, vein Adam yodeh lemi mechabet, that the people are not sure, is it Abraham, is it Isaac, is it Avraham, is it Yisrael, who is it? Mitok shatam atro bezikna, Adam yodeh lemi mechabet, but once a person can grow a beard, one person is bearded, the other one isn't, then you can tell. So Amalek Kodesh Baruch Hu, so God said to Abraham, this is again Midrash, it may be not a conversation that happened, but it's making a point. The point is, Chayecha Dovato Tavata, Abraham was told, yeah, you're right, Abraham. Umimcha hu matchil mitchilat ha-sefer adkan, enketiv zikna, and you, Abraham, will become the first, as you say in Yiddish, alter yid. You're going to become an old Jew. Now, did Abraham was excited about that? Maybe he didn't age in the way that we understand today. Not clear. But it says in the Bible, chapter 24, Abraham zaken. Abraham became old. Because he had to become old because you had to distinguish between Abraham and Isaac. So aging is important. All right? We may look, you know, a lot of people like to sort of do the look-alike game. You look like your Bobby, you look like your Zaidi, you look like whatever. But in the end of the day, we know who the older generation is, and we have no doubts about the younger generation. We don't have these problems anymore. But again, it's not saying that's a negative thing. It's actually saying, you know what? It can be a bit of a positive thing as well. There is a marvelous story. It's wonderful in the Bible with the son of King Solomon. And this is something I teach, and I sort of make a big deal out of it. King Solomon was a very smart man. We all know that, right? He was a brilliant guy. But he had a son, not so brilliant. And the son wanted to continue his father's tax collections. Father made a big tax collection, and the son wanted to continue. So the son has to ask advice. What should I do? Should I go the way my father went, or should I make it even more heavy on the people because I need more money, or should I be a bit easy? So he went to what is called, he went to the Yeladim. Yeladim means his childhood friends, the guys of the same age. You know what they said to him? Rechavam, they said, son of Solomon, you be harder on the people than your father. And it gives an expression. It says, you know, beat them with whips. If he only beat them with sticks, you take whips. Says the story, he went to ask the Zakenim. He went to ask the older people. And they said, oy vavoy, what happened with your father, the taxation, we can't stand it anymore. Right? You know, people have got tax accounts already in Switzerland, even in those days. What are you going to do? So they couldn't stand it, and they said, be easier on the people. You know, we listened to the Yeladim, the young people. What happened next? We know the history. The state of Israel split. The north went from the south. The north of Israel became like another country. And it never got together again till 1948, 70 years ago, with the birth of the new state of Israel. Never came together again. The north of Israel and the south of Israel literally became like two countries. There were guards, there was tolls or whatever to get across from one to the other. It never got together again. Why? Because he listened to the youngsters and he didn't listen to the voice of reason, the voice of experience. So the question is, now I've got two sets of references. I've got the one, oi, old age with a krechs, with a sigh. And on the other hand, I've got the references which seem to say, wow, what a source of wisdom. What a source of knowledge. What a source of, what a time of development that one can go through in one's old age. I mention a story. a few weeks ago, and I'll mention it again, that I studied in yeshiva in a Talmudical college in the north of England. Some of the helpers here come from that part of the world, some of the students. And the head of the yeshiva, he was already, he'd come from Lithuania, he survived, he came before the war to London, and he was a remarkable man, Rabbi Gurevitz, a very, very special man. And his house was opposite the entrance of the yeshiva. And we used to come out, the boys used to finish studying, maybe about 11 o'clock at night, very late. And he was sitting in his front room in his house, big picture window, and he was sitting there in the front room studying when we came out, 11:30 at night time. And I once asked him, I said, Reb Leib, his name was Arya Zev, we always called him Reb Leib. Reb Leib, Rosh Yeshiva, head of the yeshiva, why are you sitting there at 11:30 at night? And he said, I'm not trying to be haughty or trying to be showing off. I want everybody to understand there's always not just something to learn, but you've got to go over it. You've got to repeat it. You know, what I learn during the day, I think about before I go to sleep. And I don't think that's just in study. That should be about everything in life. Every day, think about what did I learn today? How did I grow? How did I become a better person today? All right? How did I become a more a concerned individual? Maybe it was because I read a certain book. Maybe it's because I saw a movie. Some of you saw the movie Defiance. That's a very, very powerful film. Shows you exactly, you know, what happened in that circumstance. Endless number of opportunities that things that we do during the day we should think about before we go to sleep, so that we have this sense of, even when we get to a later stage in life, of growth, and it can happen. And of course the question that one has to ask is which is the more authentic approach? Is it the negative one or is it the positive one? And the rabbis say very simply, it really depends on the person. All right, you can see old age, aging, as being something negative, or you can turn around and say, look, this is a time when I have more time on my hands, particularly if you're retired. It's interesting, my father, I always wanted him to retire, and at the age of 90, he finally gave up. And this was working like 7 or 8 hours every day. He was the original guy who used to cut the locks in London. There was a gentleman, it's my neighbor actually in Bergen County, who her father was the guy who did it. I think it was Zabar's, one of these places in New York. Famous, Mr. Coet. And everybody would go on Sundays or during the week, and he would cut you the locks. And they wrote a piece about him in the New York Times when he died. It could have been written about my father. The same skill, the same very warm personality. And he did this till he was 90 years old. And we said to him, you know, Dad, you know, enough already. When you can hang up your boots, as it were. You're getting a pension anyway. What do you need this for? And he said he misses the people. He loved that connection with speaking to people, having that every day. He would meet somebody different. He was working in a neighborhood in London where a lot of wealthy people lived, and he met film stars. And he would say one day, oh, you know who came in? You remember that guy from the movie? Whatever it was, oh, he came into the store today. And I said, Dad, did you get his autograph? At least something. And he never did. He always used to say, oh, I became friends. It's me, Anne, you know. And if those of you like that program, Mrs. Bouquet, the awful English woman, you know that, the husband, he was a very good friend of my father. That guy used to come into the store every week. My dad knew him. And I'm saying, you know, get his autograph. He's a very good actor. You know, he puts up with a tremendous amount of problem in that program. It's a wonderful program. That was what I felt. That aging process was so positive. Different styles, you know, maybe in whatever it can be. the Talmud gives us a great story. Listen to this. There was a rabbi called Rabbi Hanina, famous rabbi. And it says he was 80 years old. And he was not going to give in to aches and pains of old age. It says he could undo his shoes. He would stand on one leg. And he would choletz min alo, take off the other shoe, standing on one leg. And then he would do the same thing the other way around. In other words, just to prove that he was stable and he wasn't, you know, sort of finding it too difficult. This is what he did. And very many descriptions of these elderly rabbis who used to really, really do incredible, incredible things and would show their students and would show the world around them that, you know, it's there is a more positive way to deal with this. Obviously, it depends, you know, if you're blessed with good health or not. That's a whole issue by itself. It's very, very interesting. Rabbi Soloveitchik and the whole Soloveitchik family, very well known in New York and around the world, he writes about aging. And Rabbi Soloveitchik makes the following point. He says that before the Bible was given, it says in the Bible there that they had to have a fight with what is called Amalek. Why do you have to have a war before you get the Bible? What was that all about? And Rabbi Soloveitchik said that it was to teach something very, very important. It's saying to the Jewish people, he says I'll read this here. I've just got the quote from his book. I love that jingle. That's one of the best. He says the quote from the book. He says the people were in a war, which at one point they looked as if they were going to lose. And then they had to fight harder in order to overcome it. He says what the war with Amalek taught the Jews before they even got the Bible was that there are going to be trials and tribulations in life. And one of the lessons of dealing with life is to overcome those challenges. That's what he said. That's how Rabbi Soloveitchik explained those particular events. And he talks about aging. And one of the things that Nebuch, when he got old, he also unfortunately suffered from dementia and everything else. And it was very, very difficult because he understood that this is not something you can give a carte blanche, you can say exactly what's going to happen. But he did make it very, very clear that there are challenges which one has to overcome literally on a day-to-day basis. The new generation taking over. Oh boy. We always talk about this whole concept. The rabbis had awareness of this. Very often this is a challenge in shuls. I was in a shul in a synagogue which I belonged to for 18 years. And the rabbi there is a very wonderful, wonderful, he's on the radio every week. He's now in his 70s and I'm feeling, you know, with all due respect, you've got to hand it over to a younger person for his own benefit. His own peace of mind. He's still a lot of energy. He teaches in Yeshiva University almost every day. Very, very special man, Benjamin Yudin. Some of you may know him. Very, very unique person. Wonderful, wonderful rabbi. And when I bring up the subject with people who are still in part of that community, the answer is, yeah, he wants to give it up, but the Rebbetzin wants to continue. What are you going to do if the Rebbetzin says no? The Rebbetzin says no. You know, his wife is so strong. There must come a point where you hand it over. It's just understood that there is, but of course, the word that has been invented for rabbis who still stay around, emeritus. And emeritus is not always an easy arrangement, but very often, if it works out, it's a wonderful arrangement. Where I live now in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, there's an emeritus rabbi called Rabbi Rothman, a wonderful rabbi. And he does stay out of the picture. The current rabbi makes the decisions. The older rabbi is there. But you know what? When you need someone to talk to, when you need someone to give you a little bit of extra advice, experience, life experience, he's there. Rabbi Rothman is there. And he is very, very special. Meshbi Gazun, really, he's not a youngster. He still reads the Torah more or less every week, twice, three times a week. For the public, he reads the Torah out loud. A very, very unique person. So, you know what? It's important. Very often in a synagogue, if it's too much going towards the youngsters and away from the older generation, that also is not such a great thing. I know in Washington Heights, those who know the community, the Germanic community there is very much an aging community. There's no question about it. But what has happened is that a lot of youngsters have discovered it because they found that living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan was just too expensive. So a lot of the kids, a lot of the students finish studying in their college career and they go and live in Washington Heights. There's been literally hundreds upon hundreds of young people living there. And the challenge of the shul, particularly there's one synagogue there, Mount Sinai, is to keep the leadership relevant to the youngsters. But at the same time, and this is the real challenge, to make it also relevant to the older generation that's still there and still attends the synagogue and wants to make sure the synagogue flourishes, but they want to be part of it. So to have the right rabbi or to have the right set of leaders is very, very difficult. It's not easy. And again, this is a problem in the yeshiva world, in the colleges, etc. Having that sense of, on the one hand, the new person, and on the other hand, the continuity of the older person. I notice this. I work in my work in New York. Part of it is also in connected to Columbia and Barnard. And in Barnard College, they switched presidents about 3 or 4 years ago. And the woman who was there beforehand, Judith Shapiro, had been there for like 25 years. And was a wonderfully accomplished, very, very interesting, very aware of her Jewishness. It was all part of the you know, what she gave to the college. And she had years of experience. They brought in somebody new who had wonderful connections in the philanthropic world. Right, she is best buddies with what's her name, the actress, the very famous actress, who Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep actually came to speak in the college, but in terms of that sense of experience, you know, having had life experience, it was very shallow. And in fact, what happens is that as soon as she got a better job 6 months ago, she didn't wait for graduation, she had already left. That was shocking to me. That someone would leave a college position, a president of a college, not even waiting to speak to the graduating class, but you've got a better offer, you're gone. There was something really not right with that. And I you know, a lot of people agreed with me, a lot of people felt the same. The taking over the new generation. Very interesting. Wow, this is a statement in Talmud. They used to have coins made when there was a new leader in the Jewish world, as you have new coins in every situation, like in this country as well. And it says that when Abraham was in charge, it says he had a coin which was made. On one side of the coin there was a zaken, there was an image of an older man, and on the other side there was an image. Zaken and Zkena. There was an old couple on one side. And on the other side, there was an image of a young boy and a young girl on the back of the coin. Very interesting. So Abraham understood that even when people are doing their everyday business, they would see a coin, they would look at the coin and say, what is this coin teaching me? That there has to be a combination of the older generation and the younger generation. And both are absolutely vital. I don't belittle this in any way whatsoever. Give you a statement from Talmud. This again is fascinating. There was a city, I don't know if any of you have heard of this, there's a city which was known as the city of Luz, L-U-Z, or in Hebrew, Lamed Vav Zion. And the Talmud says Luz was a famous town, nobody ever died in this city. Sounds like a place to go and live, right? If you know the film Cocoon, do you remember the movie Cocoon? Nobody ever died, they have to go off into outer space, if I remember rightly, in order to carry on living. Unbelievable, that was a great movie. It made a very strong point. But this city, nobody died. So what happened? It says like this, and it's a fascinating story. The Talmud brings the story that there was this city called Luz, and one of the great enemies of the world, the civilized world, 2,500 years ago, was a man, is mentioned in the Bible, called Sennacherib, Sancherib. He came to the city of Luz. And lo bilbala, he couldn't do anything. He used to take populations and mix them up and took the Jews, the 10 tribes, and he took them away to Ethiopia and he took them all over the place, as we know. When it came to this city, he could have no effect on them whatsoever. It says Nebuchadnezzar, the famous leader of the Babylonians, came and he couldn't destroy the city. And he says even the Malach HaMoves, even the angel of death, could do nothing there. He had no permission to go there. So what happened? Why aren't they still around? So it says, look, you know, at a point where they got old, it says that Shadaton Katselem, it says that they can no longer continue. They were getting to a ripe old age. It says Yotzin Chutzal Choma Vehem Meitin. They would just leave the city and they would die, as they say, in a natural way. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So the Talmud again recognizes that there is this famous city that did exist where, you know, life was actually sort of, suddenly the end of life was dealt with in a very unique way. Not somewhere which they gave you any directions. There's no MapQuest over here telling me where it is. And I don't think it's around, certainly not in this day and age. Listen to this. It says another, just reading statements of Talmud. A rabbi became 60 years old. His name was Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Joseph, very famous rabbi. What did he do? It says, when he became 60, it says, Avad Yom Tov, he made a yontov, he made a happy day, right? Le Rabbanan, he made a big party for the rabbis. He says, Nafkali Mikareid, I'm at a stage now where I know that I've achieved a certain point in my life. I've got to be thankful to God. Every birthday party that I ever attend, certainly of an older generation, which, you know, nowadays for me is getting less and less. I haven't got many of that generation left in my family, was a big event. My father, I remember his 95th. It was just wonderful. You know, all the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, everybody turned up. I was already living here and flew back to London. It was very, very special. It wasn't, you know, something that was in, as they say, the Royal Albert Hall. It wasn't in one of these bigger conference halls. It was at home, my brother's house. But it was such a special event because it was celebrating the life of. It wasn't celebrating the end of a person's life, but it was celebrating the achievements of that person's life. How to treat old people. This is my favorite. You go to Israel. Talk about Israel before. And you get on the bus. Let's put it this way. You get on the MTA if you have that particular, sometimes pleasant, sometimes less pleasant situation. And on the bus, it says at the beginning, it says vacate the seats for people who are elderly and sometimes whatever. In Israel, you have a little sign over there where the same seats on the Eged bus, and it's a verse from the Bible. Midnei seva tokum. Please, it says, rise before the elderly. Give that elderly person the seat. And that, to me, sums up why Israel is such a special place. Which other country in the world gives an instruction on a bus, which is a quote direct from the Hebrew Bible? Unbelievable. And not only that, but it's a very important instruction. Get on the bus, make sure that you give up the seat. Quote here from the Talmud again. The rabbis tell us, they say, Seva Takum, this famous verse, get up for someone who is elderly. It says, Yochlafim v'nei zokin hashemayim. Does it mean that you get up even for someone who, let's say, you don't respect, you have a lot of complaints? It says, Zakein, ein zakein el chacham. You should recognize, say the rabbis, that, you know what? Getting up for a person is a recognition of the wisdom, I'm going to use the word life experience, that that person has acquired. And when you get on the bus and you stand up for that person, it is a phenomenal thing. Israeli buses, you could talk about them for the next 25 hours, because everybody, when you get on a bus in Israel, you've got an experience which you just cannot replicate probably anywhere else in the world. I don't know what to say. I think the Israeli bus drivers are really remarkable in so many ways. You know, the way they, particularly the way they drive. All right? My mother-in-law tells a wonderful story. She says that my parents-in-law lived in Israel for 8 years in the late 50s. This is a long time ago. And the Eged bus driver, the bus drivers there have always been the same. They like to show they can drive the bus on two wheels whenever it's convenient to do so. It's very scary. So this guy was driving, they were living in Haifa. If you know Haifa, up the hill there, going down towards the city, it's a very hairy bus ride. And the guy was going very fast and on two wheels. And my mother-in-law goes to the bus driver. She says to him, sir, I have 4 children at home. Please stop. Go slow. And he looks at her, only in Israel, and he says, lady, he says, I've got 6 at home, what do you want from my life? And that's such a typical Israel story. How are you ever going to argue against someone like that? Impossible. But again, you know, the point is that even the bus becomes a learning opportunity, a place where you gain wisdom and experience. My greatest joys in living in Israel was to sit opposite a gentleman. Sometimes I'd recognize them, very often I didn't. Great scholars, and sometimes they're even clean-shaven. There was a rabbi in Israel, came from South Africa, called it Rabbi Hillevitz. Rabbi Hillevitz eventually became one of my teachers. Very clean-shaven rabbi. Who is this man? He was the first author of a book which is called the Talmudic Encyclopedia. It's the most amazing book. It's now running to nearly 40 volumes, and he was the first author of it. The first editor, he would take all the articles and put them into the book. And he's sitting opposite me, and after I sort of started talking to him a little bit, I realized who this man was, and he fell off the chair. And he, for him, you know, life was normal. He got on a bus, and he had to go to the market, and he had to, whatever he was doing, and, you know, that was normal. But it's a phenomenon. And again, meeting people like that and having that experience, nothing like it in the world. What do we say about retirement? Can you retire in Jewish terms? The answer is no. There's no such thing as retirement. It's back to what my dad used to believe. I'm talking about retiring not from work. Of course, one can retire. And it's obviously what everybody does it at the moment when they are ready to do so. My wife keeps telling me she wants to stop working because she's got so much to do. That means not to stop working, but to start working, because she wants to volunteer and she wants to. She does a lot of sewing and a lot of things with the grandchildren, and she wants to have more time to travel. My kids. We moved to America to be near to my kids, right? Because we were living in England, and my daughter had already lived here. So where does my daughter now live? In Houston, Texas. Thank you very much. My other son, a bit closer, Baltimore. Right, so that's fine. And one daughter, thank God, around the corner. So we scored, you know, sort of 1.5 out of 3. It was okay, but it's not easy. So is there such a thing as stopping from being Jewish? The answer is no. And that's something that, again, we've learned and people have learned. And unfortunately, many Jews forget that the reality of it is, and look how shocking it is in the 21st century, when we thought that the scourge, only word I'm going to use, of anti-Semitism had gone away. We thought after the Holocaust, how can they come back and be anti-Semitic again? How? How after what we went through, after the and people know, it's not now hidden knowledge. People are talking, people are, you know, Spielberg made the famous movie, and so many people now are aware, and children are being, not enough I would argue, but children in the widest possible context are being given that information. So how can it come back again? But it's coming back. And we are probably being given a reminder, you know what? Maybe we need a reminder that we can't shake it off. The fact that we are who we are is something which doesn't go away. It just cannot go away. There are opportunities to study. I talk about this a lot. Listen to this. The famous story of Jacob. He wanted to retire. The Jacob, the son of Isaac, right? So what does it say? It says the following, and this is wonderful. Bikesh Yaakov, I read it in Hebrew. Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva. Jacob wanted to retire. He wanted to have a peaceful life. Right? Nowadays, you would say he wants to go and live in Florida, and he wants to have a peaceful life, and excuse me, walk on the Broadwalk every day. He wants to just have a nice time. So what happens? And he's in Israel. What better place to live? You know, he's potentially in such a beautiful place. And it says at that moment, God got angry with him. And he said, you want to retire? You've got so much to give to the Jewish world. You've got so much to teach. You've got so much to add to the future life experience of everybody that's going to descend from you. I'm going to bring along Joseph, that son, the one you love. And you're going to have sorrows from this son like you never had before. He is going to go and he's going to start, yeah, you say in Yiddish, oiskiputz. That means he's going to stand in front of the mirror every day and he's going to make sure he looks good and he's very, you know, he's very much into himself at the beginning. Not at the end, but at the beginning. And then he gets jealous, the brothers, and he starts making stories about the brothers, what they're getting up to, and they start finding him very unpleasant, they don't like him. And we all know the story, he's sent off to Egypt, and you know, he's down there for a long time. When they come down to Egypt, they recognize him. The rabbis say, why not? Because it says he grew a beard. But it's more than that. Not just that he grew a beard, he became a mensch. He grew up. And once he'd grown up and he understood what he'd put the family through, even though he wasn't going to let the father know immediately, and there's a lot of discussion about that, I don't want to go into that now, but the reality of it was Joseph was teaching his father and his brothers certain lessons in life which had to be learned. How the Jew survives, not only in the environment in Israel, which is the country of Jewish life, but even in Egypt, which was so antithetical to everything that they stood for. The morality, everything in Egypt was against what they were believing in terms of biblical requirement. And yet, the Jew survives. And how do we know this? The beautiful custom every Friday night that a father takes his son and he gives him a blessing and he blesses him. What does he say? May God bless you like Ephraim and Manasseh. How strange. Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh were the two sons of Joseph born in Egypt. Right? Why don't we say, may God bless you like Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, the famous fathers? Why Ephraim and Manasseh? So the rabbis say, because they were very special. Because they remained Jewish and they remained aware of who they were in Egypt. In the place which was so removed from the life that they probably could have lived in Israel, but they still remembered who they were. They still had Jewish names. They still had names to remind everybody who they were, to remind them who they were and what their lives were really about. And that is said by every parent around the world every Friday night. Even in Israel, you've got to be reminded what it means to be a Jewish person, to have that heritage, which thank God we have, we still keep hold of. What do I say as a consequence of this? And it's not easy. How does one deal with the issues of old age? And as I said, I don't want to get into sort of what I call the aches and pains of old age, which I understand, and that's a separate, almost a separate discussion. Obviously, in terms of medicine, how much the rabbinic world is concerned with medical issues, and there's a whole different lecture, essentially. You know, I talk a bit about that, the issues of even to go to the extreme of what is called euthanasia, which in Jewish practice is not allowed, is not accepted, and things like that. But this is more generic. I honestly believe that we are living in incredible times for the reason that there is now available to us, not only through JCCs, not only through our synagogues, not only coming to this beautiful place at the Berkshires, wherever we may be, just take that little machine, learn how to use the internet, you've got a world of knowledge out there. There's a new rabbi on the block. He's called Rabbi Google. Go to Rabbi Google. You can Google your whole life away, because you will find out things and knowledge and awareness. It's beyond belief. It's almost as if there is an entrance. It's like that movie when they used to go down a time tunnel, if you remember that TV show. And they would come out at the other end, and they would be in a different world or in a different place. Sometimes it will be a man jumping from one century to the next. With Google, you press a button, and boy, you have got access to knowledge. You've got access to a world. You can do courses. You can do learning and study. You can make yourself, even at the advanced age that you might find yourself, there is always an ability to become more educated. And this is, again, to me, I think, the positive element coming out of this. It obviously, as I said, this is very individual, and for some people it works, for better, some less. Whatever it is, to find that thing that you can do to make not only getting old, but being an older person, make it into a positive experience. That is a blessing which I cannot remotely begin to tell you how amazing it is. The Chofetz Chaim, the famous rabbi of Radin, died in 1933. They don't know how old he was when he died. Some say he was 95, some say he was 105. These rabbis, they don't seem to have birth certificates. It's amazing. I just don't get it. And Rabbi Shach in B'nai Brak, also they weren't sure, was he 100, was he 101, 102? These are amazing men. And they've dedicated their lives not only to their students, but to the Jewish world. Without these people, our Jewish world today would not be as learned and as solid as it is. Obviously, there's more to do in every generation as the new challenges come along. There are incredible rabbis today in Washington Heights. Those who know the neighborhood, there's a rabbi living there. He is literally one of the greatest rabbis in the world today. Name is Herschel Schachter. He's an unbelievable, very modest man. What this man doesn't know about, not just the Jewishness of whatever subject it is, but what he doesn't know about other stuff is just beyond belief. And modesty is not even a word to describe him. And just, you know, to get to know some of the people, some of the options, especially if you're living in a metropolis, wherever it may be, if you're in Florida, if you're in New York, if you're wherever, New Jersey, the options to go and make yourself aware, connected to people with this knowledge. I just throw this out as one of the ways that not only being of the older age is not going to be a negative experience, on the contrary, it becomes so positive. And everyone works it out in his or her own way. I can only say, you know, with a blessing, that how does it go? You know, you sort of you say bis 120, right? A person should be till 120. So somebody once said to me, he says, no. He says it's a different, it means something else. He says bis 100, you should live to 100 und 20 and be like a 20-year-old. Not bad, right? Live to 100, but you should have the mind, the power, the energy of a 20-year-old. May not be so easy, but you know what I'm saying. And with that blessing, I bless everybody here, Bishudin and Svansi. We should all really have that positive attitude, take it away from here, from this really remarkable location, this remarkable place, go back into our lives and become positive, because I think that's the way to go. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much. Big question.
My friend's mother... lived to be 112.
Wow. Who's
when, she was 100.
Friend's mother.
When she was 100, we took her out for dinner, and she fully participated in the conversation.
Yeah.
And the woman next to me said, "Susan, madam, I work in a home for elderly people. How interesting is it to see an elderly woman so full of living things? How old are you?" Thinking Goldie would say she's 80. Goldie says, "I'm 100. It's 100. God bless you, God bless you, God bless you, God bless you." When Goldie gets up to leave, she stops at another, "Excuse me, madam, I'm 100 years old. I was just given 6 God bless yous. I don't need that many. I'm going to give you one."
Beautiful. Very good. Thank you very much.
I wrote it up and sent it.
Oh, that's great. That's good. And she lived to 112.
Yeah, and she got a telephone call from a niece in Colorado. "Goldie, I saw your name in the New York Times."
I'll tell you a little story. Somebody, my Bechutin, my son-in-law's father, my grandfather, lived to 103. Wow. And at 100, in England, you get a letter from the Queen. That's a big honor.
Yeah, yeah.
In America, you get a letter from the President. His problem was that it was during Obama's days, and he's a Republican. Oy vavoy. He didn't want the letter from Obama. He was not interested. It was so funny. He got so upset. I think that made him live another few years to get to a Republican president so he could get a letter. And he died this year. It was after Trump got in. Unbelievable.
He could have striken out Obama and right in Trump.
Oh, I don't think so. It wouldn't be the same. It's so funny. I mean, it really is. But that's the story. Thank everybody for listening. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm sorry about Miami. I got a bit... I'm
positive about it. I really am positive.